This is June 25th, and I'm sitting together with Esther Andreen Albright in Moline, Illinois. So there's a German name, though.
Yeah, and my husband was German and English. His father was German, his mother was English.
Oh, and they were born, both of them, over here?
Yes, in fact, his mother's people came over in the 1600s.
Oh, I see. So they are old, real old-timers, then.
That's right. But the Albrights came over in the early 1800s.
Mm-hmm. But on your side, no. Your grandfather, Andreas Andreen, he came from Gränna in Sweden.
That's right.
And it was all the way back to 1853, if I remember right.
Yeah.
So, and then he had several children, and one of them was Gustav Andreen.
That's right.
Your father. But on your mother's side, no, she was Norwegian.
That is right.
And her name was Marie, or Mary, or...
Her name was really Marie Augusta Strand. But when she went to school, the teacher said, no, you don't spell it M-A-R-I-E, you spell it M-A-R-Y. And my grandmother was furious. She says, your name is Marie. But anyway, Mary stuck. So my mama was called Mary the rest of her life.
And she was born in Junction?
In Kansas.
Junction City.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if we continue on this, she grew up there with her parents.
Mm-hmm.
They had a homestead there in Junction City.
Well, outside of Junction, he took a claim about 40 miles out.
And that was early in the 1860s, sometimes. Or?
And he took a claim in about 1870.
1870.
And because of the hardships and the problems, my grandmother was frightened of the Indians, but they never really hurt her. It was a white man that worried her. And when they came one time, there were some white men, they tried to scare him off the place after he had dug a well and had established built a cabin and had farmed a while. Then they tried to scare him off so they could sell the land to somebody else at a higher price. And they called him to come out. They were all in the cabin together, my mother, my grandmother, and they threw a rope over a limb of a tree and said they were going to hang him. And so my grandmother went out there and stood resolutely beside her husband with her two children, two little babies, really. And he says, well, what do you do with the children? He said, we'll throw them in the river. And while my grandmother didn't exactly understand English, she knew what they were saying. And that was the deciding point with her. She says, I won't stay here anymore. So then he went into Junction City and got what job he could and left his claim.
Gave it up?
Yep, he did. Because she said she just wouldn't do it. She wouldn't stay there.
Were those land sharks, you think, or hired by land agents to do things like this?
Land sharks. They were land sharks. That's right. Exactly.
So he didn't get 1 cent off what he put in then, in buildings
Mm-mm.
or anything?
Mm-mm. It was mainly, he was willing to stay, but she said, this is too much, I can't take it. They were going to hang him, and it was just more than she could take.
Did they leave any cattle or anything behind? Anything they had?
Well, I don't know about that, whether he managed to take his, when he left. He no doubt took what possessions he could. I really don't know that story, that part of the story. But my mother told me this, that was a deciding point with her, my grandmother.
Mm-hmm. How many children were there?
Well, there were two children at the time. Because my mother was born just shortly after they arrived in Kansas. So she was born in Kansas, but her brother was born in Norway.
So he got a job then in Junction City?
Any job he could get, that's right.
And they stayed on there all their lives and lives?
That's right.
So how did your mother know get in contact with your father, Gustav Andrin?
Mother saw an ad to work in a photograph gallery in Lindsberg. And so she decided she was going to go in and apply for it. So she did. That was not too far from Junction City. And she got the job. It was Gröndahl. He was the photographer in Lindsberg. And she worked there for a year and a half. And then they asked her to become the third grade teacher in their elementary department. And Bethany College had an elementary department as well as high school, just as Augustana did too. And so she taught in the elementary department of Bethany College. And that's how my mother met him when she went to Lindsberg.
Did she have any teaching experience before?
No.
Well, they needed someone.
In those days, they didn't. They just hired people, that was all. No, she had no experience.
Your mother, no, she was a go-getter. She was not afraid to step into something.
Well, apparently she struck out for Lindsberg for the job. And she was a go-getter. Maybe she was more like her father there. And I can understand how my grandmother felt, though, when they were threatening to kill her husband. And there she was in a strange country with children. And I think in my thesis, I bring out the story, too, that when he went to town, it was a two-day trip with the ox team, 40 miles.
From Junction City out to the claim.
Yes, and when he went to get supplies, and it was a two-day trip, and she'd insist on being put in the dugout that they had for the ox team. And then an Indian came, and he admired my mother. She was a little baby and with curly hair, and he thought she was cute, and he wanted to buy her. He offered to buy her with a yard of red cloth. And of course my grandmother wouldn't make the trade, and but she was scared to death. So there were a number of things that frightened her. But he says, the Indians will never hurt you. He declared that. He says, give them something to eat and they'll be happy. She usually would give them a loaf of bread, and then grunt and then leave. And they never did harm my grandmother or harm anything there.
But wasn't this scary, or to make a habit all of them to come and beg for?
It was their habit to come and beg for things, that's right.
So the more they gave them, the more they...
Well, I don't know about that. They had a different idea of ownership, you see. The land belonged to God. And we have the idea that a person owns the land. It was a different culture entirely. And so when they would stop and at a dugout, they felt they had a right to walk into that cabin or dugout or whatever they had. It was just a difference in culture. And I know they... one of the pioneer women of Kansas, I read that story not too long ago, it was sent in by different people and different experiences. And it shows that the Indians were just proceeding by their own culture. And they just felt that any cabin that was on the land, they could go in and take a look at things. And they would enter a house and pull out the bureau drawers and then look at the beds and laugh. Lift up the women's hoop skirts and laugh. Everything was funny. And it scared the women to death. But they didn't ever hurt them. Well, there were times, of course, we have stories when there were bloody massacres, but my grandmother experienced nothing like that, except she was scared to death.
How about your grandfather? No, he didn't go to the land office. There was a land office in Junction City, if I remember.
Oh yeah, he had, everything was in his
did
own.
Did he go down there and complain about the situation in any way? Or the
well, police? The district sheriff was a friend of his, and his name was Lanne, L-A-N-E. And when he mentioned to these men who were going to hang him, he says, you'll have a lot of explaining to do to Lanne. And at the name of Lana, they looked frightened. Then they left. He might have complained. I don't know. I really don't know much about that part of the story because my mother never told me anything.
But there was no recourse. They were just to leave.
Just left.
And that was the end of it.
Yeah, well, I can understand how my grandmother felt.
So they didn't think of moving into Lindsborg or with their daughter?
What? Oh, no, no. They had no idea of ever moving there. No, he had a job and he worked there.
Were there other Norwegians in the area?
There were no Norwegians in that area. Of course, in that time, 10 miles was a great distance. And it so happened, and I think I bring that out in my thesis, that Dr. Olsen, who became president of Augustana, happened by, and he baptized my mother and the other children that had come into being since after that. So he baptized them on his way through the place. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Olof Olsen, he was in Lindsborg then when your mother came down there to teach?
Well, I don't know about that, but he, when my mother was just a child, he came into Junction City, and there is where he baptized. She wanted them baptized. And she didn't have any respect for any of the churches that they had there, these circuit riders. And that. She had no respect for them and didn't consider them church.
So there was no established Norwegian or Swedish Lutheran church in the area then?
Not there, at that time at least.
Too far away too?
No, not at all.
In other places. So then she met your father.
That's right.
Is there when she saw someone with a wrinkled coat outside the window coming by?
That's right.
Explain a little bit about that one. How did they come about? Or?
Well, I suppose he wasn't too careful with his clothes, but she'd see him going by the place where she was living, and she said she never saw a more wrinkled coat in her life. I can understand that. They didn't have coat hangers in those days.
So Gustav Andrén, he was on the teaching assignment too then?
Yeah, he was teaching at Bethany College in the college department.
And that was after his graduation from Augustana?
That is right. Mm-hmm.
And so what was he teaching at?
I think anything they gave him, mainly German, but he taught other subjects too. I know that because he told me that. Huh?
So, what did your grandparents on your mother's side now say when she brought home a Swede?
Well, they thought Gustav Andrén was all right, but they said it was just too bad he wasn't Norwegian. It's too bad.
It was that kind of feeling, though, between
Norwegians
and Swedes.
Oh, very much. In fact, I don't think they thought too much of the Swedes. And even to this day, when I'm over in Norway and with friends, they don't speak very nicely about the Swedes. They're uncultured and rough and such.
It's a neighborly feeling.
yeah. And I suppose the Swedes feel the same way about the Norwegians. I don't know.
But your father now, what kind of young man was he? He didn't pay attention to anything like that?
Apparently not. He fell in love with my mother. And
so he went with your mother out and to visit her parents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they were engaged.
Yes.
In Lindsborg.
They were engaged. My father then asked her parents for permission to marry. And then about a year and a half later, they were married. And father's uncle, A.W. Dahlsten, came down there and officiated.
What was he pastor at that time in the...
Well, I don't know. The ministerium will tell you where he was a pastor. He was around in Kansas someplace.
Yes.
But he came down there and he officiated.
So they were married in the Bethany Church then? Or,
No, they were married in Junction City.
Oh, I see.
At my grandparents' home. Oh, yes.
So then his parents came from Rock Island or Moline. Your father's parents, did they come down for a while?
Well, my grandfather, Andrine, was a minister in Swedona at the time.
At that time.
Yeah. But he was also a minister in Indiana.
Yeah, David Tallman.
But at the time, yeah, that's right. But he was, as father grew up, they were around Swedona. Mm-hmm.
So did they go down then to Kansas when he was married? Or was that too far to travel at the time?
What do you mean?
When your father was married to your mother now.
Yeah.
Did they came from Swedona then down to...
Oh, no, no. He was teaching at Bethany at the time.
Yes, but I mean his parents.
His parents were both dead.
When he married?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
they were both dead when he was 16 years old.
Oh, I see. That's
now, there's a story, too, that could be maybe of interest to you. My grandfather had what today we call a mastoid. In fact, Dr. Eister, he was our family doctor from Rock Island as I grew up. His father, in turn, was a minister and was frequently a teacher now and then at Augustana for different courses. I think he taught English mainly. But anyway, Dr. Eister himself told me what your grandfather had was a mastoid. And he, in those days, they just put salve on, and that was no good. And he got worse and worse, and finally it infected and affected his brain. And according to my father's little booklet, they feared for his sanity. And the pain would get terrific. And then this goes into another story. Mrs. Lars Paul Esbjörn was a widow. She moved into Swedona after she left Sweden when her husband had died. And she would make advances to my grandfather. And my aunts and uncles didn't like that. And so whenever he went down to get the mail, she would be there to invite him in for coffee. Well, they tried to have one of the children with him always to try to brush Mrs. Lars Paul Esbjörn out. Anyway, it so happened a cousin of my father's was sort of helping with the household tasks. And there were about seven children. And she said that nobody there in Swedona believed that he was sane. He was going off the beam. Well, my father was studying at Augustana at the time. And finally then, she got him to marry her. And the people in Swedona, as well as my father's cousin, she herself told me, she said he was not himself. They all believed he was insane. But anyway, he did marry her, according...
So she stayed at Swedona too then, Mrs. Esbjörn?
She moved into Swedona. And then when she married him, she moved into the parsonage and sent all of his children out. She came with five of her own. And there were no room for the minister's children. So all seven of them were kicked out.
She was really something.
Well, there was a very hard feeling against her. My father always tried to smooth things over. Anyway, different families in the countryside took the kids, different ones. I know my Uncle Philip was taken by Mrs. Hugner, the grandmother of Mrs. E.E. Ryden, and different uncles and aunts. And the congregation built a house for my aunts. There was Lydia and Tora and Hilda. Of course, in those days, building a house wasn't so expensive. There was no plumbing. And anyhow, I saw the house one time when I was there. I don't suppose it's there anymore. But anyway, They said, that was the house that the congregation built for your aunts after they got kicked out. And, I know when my cousin, Irene, she married Reverend Christensen. When she came, he was here for 3 years studying in the seminary. Mama suggested they go up and call her Grandma Esbier. That's what we all called her. Her name was really Andrine. And when they went to vote, she was always recorded as Andrine. Anyway, she was married for 2 months when he committed suicide.
2 months.
Two months.
And she came back from Sweden after 1870.
Oh, yeah.
She stayed quite a few years in Sweden alone then.
I really don't know when she came, but anyway, she got him to marry her and moved into the parsonage and kicked the kids out. And as I say, my father always tried to smooth things over. And
was he still at home then, your father?
He was at Augustana, except he was home in the summers.
I see. Because he started very young at Augustana.
He was 11 years old. And but he'd be home summers. He was 16 years old when his father died. His mother died 2 years before. In fact, when his mother died, Mrs. Esbjorn was over there and fussing around, and she said to Mrs. Setterdahl, was she a relative of hers?
No, but he was a pastor.
And Mrs. Setterdahl told me this herself. She said, "Jag vet, de min efterträdare vill bli." And that was right. She figured that that's what she was trying to do. But anyway, that Mrs. Setterbrook called me one time and for afternoon coffee, and she told me that. And she told me some other things too. Well, but Mrs. L.P. Esbjorn, later Mrs. Andrine, did not sit so well with the people in this congregation. No, they didn't like her. And
why,
thought
did
that
why did she do this? Was it because of she was afraid to lose her children or something, or not support
them? She felt more security. He was the minister in the congregation there, and then she established herself as the minister's wife. And I think she felt that she was establishing herself. Well, anyway, there was. When my cousin came to with her husband when he was studying at Augustana, Irene Christensen, Mama said, "Let's go up and see her." She says, "Well, my mother didn't tell me to go to see her. That's a cinch." And well, anyway, we went up there. As I say, my father always tried to smooth things over. So I think she maybe felt lack of security, and Mrs. L.P. and felt that she could establish herself, but that she was the aggressive one and that he was off the beam and when this happened, and this mastoid affected his brain, and the pain got so intense that he hanged himself right down. In fact, he got to be more than Mrs. L.P. could take care of, and so she sent him here. Papa was a student in Augustana. She sent him down to Rock Island to be under Papa's care. And he was a student. I don't know what he could do. But according to my father's notebooks, every night they'd go out and hunt for him, because he'd wander around and nobody knew where he was until he found him. And then that one time they found him. And then he was right about off of 7th Avenue, a little south of 7th Avenue, between about 42nd and 43rd Street. That was just a woodsy area. Mm-hmm. And there's where he hanged himself.
There must have been a tremendous blow for your dad to realize this. Maybe it was coming, so he knew about it.
Well, people criticized him, of course, and in those days, I think they were more critical of such things, and he was consigned to hell because he committed suicide. And my father took his side and felt that the situation was quite different. And my father would not accept that criticism against his father. But there were a great many friends that in Swedona that certainly were loyal to the Andrine family and practically brought them up.
What happened after Mrs. Esbjorn? There was Gustava.
Yeah.
Albertina.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to her now when her husband suddenly died, and could she still stay on in the parsonage and keep?
Well, I don't know just exactly what happened at when he died. Of course, she was no longer the pastor's wife.
So she had to move on.
And just how it happened, she moved to Rock Island and lived on 30th Street, is it? Or 31st Street? The house is still standing. And about 10th or 11th Avenue. Very close to where the house on the hill, the house on the hill, along in that area. And as I grew up, I was instructed to call her Grandma Asbjorn. And I did, and we were on friendly terms.
So you remember her then?
Oh, yes. I was up there many times. In fact, Carl Asbjorn, many times, he was a professor then at Augustana, and frequently he'd go to France and some. He never let his mother know that he was really going out of the country. But he'd usually get me to go up there and be there at night, sleep there. And so he'd come down and say, would you be up there? And so sometimes for 3 and 4 weeks straight, I'd be up there just over the night, and then I'd go back home. But he had me, we were on good terms, Carl Asbjorn and I, although he was another one that was peculiar. I'll tell you about him later. But it just the same, we were on good terms, he and I. And I was instructed to call him Uncle Carl.
So he was about 15, 20 years older than you?
Oh my, more than that, I think. To me, he was always an old man. I was, at the time when I first started spending nights with Grandma Asbjorn, I think maybe I was about 13, 14 years old. And I don't know how old he was, but to me, he was an old man. And so I'd go up there, and I know one time when he came back, well, he gave me a box, 5-pound box of candy, and oh, I thought that was wonderful. Another time when he came back, he brought me a little coin purse that he bought in Paris, and also a little handkerchief. But as I say, he and I were always friendly, and I think he liked me. At the same time, there were times when I could not understand him. He was one that everything had to be done according to the rule, whatever the rule was. For example, one time, this was after I was in college, this shows his quality that in him that I couldn't understand. Papa had taught German 1 year during Asbjorn's absence. I guess he had a sabbatical or something. But Papa taught German, his German class, that particular year. And so when I was enrolled, I think it was third year German, it was Wilhelm Tell we were reading. And I had Papa's book, and it was full of Latin and Greek references to this and that and the other, you know, all over. And so I took the book to Asbjorn, and to Carl Asbjorn, and I said, you take this book and I'll take yours. I said, this is, maybe you'll understand more what these Latin and Greek references mean than I do. And he looked it over. No, he says, that's all right. And then that year was during Christmas holidays. He came in, he wanted to see me, and he was quite stern. And he says, you know it's a rule that we don't have interlinears. And he was always, and anybody cheating or writing in the translation or putting the English word above, that was enough to knock you to Hades forever. Well, anyway, I said, I went to you with the book, and they were Latin and Greek, and I said, it means nothing to me, and I offered to exchange. Yes, that's right, but it's a rule that we don't have interlinears. If you have interlinears, well, you have to take a special private examination for cheating. Well, I said, I haven't cheated. And I said, it was with your permission, just the same. He made me take the examination. Now, can you understand that? I don't understand.
What did your father say about that?
Papa kept still. He didn't. Papa let. And
did you tell your father about it?
Oh yeah. And my mother was right there at the time. My father wasn't there, but Papa knew what was going on. And then, but he says, I will exonerate you. So when I came back, he says, she has taken the examination before having interlinears, but I exonerate her. Now, you figure out his following the rule. And another time, he had a class. So, but we had a rule that the class average had to be 80. That was it. They gave them numerical numbers in those days. And Reinerson got 70 for his grade, and Carl Bergman got 90 for his grade. And Reinerson went to Carl Esbjorn and said, well, really, he said, I did better than that, and I don't deserve the grade 70. No, he says, that's right, you deserve more than that, but we have the rule that the class average has to be 80. And he said, Carl Bergman was almost a perfect student. He says, he deserves more than 90. But that's the way he did it, because of the rule. And, well, there was another case. I think his name was Friedland. He was a dentist in Chicago. That is later on. But while he was studying at Augustana, he was in preparation to become a dentist in collaboration with the Northwestern University. We had agreements that we could prepare certain students for a certain number of years before they went. And so he had to have German. But Carl Esbjorn came to my father and he says, we have a rule that before you take German, you have to have 2 years of Latin. And Friedland doesn't have 2 years of Latin. And then Father said, well, really, he said, in a way, he's really the student of Northwestern with the agreement that we have with him, with Northwestern, where he's preparatory for Northwestern. Just the same, we have that rule. He has to have, so he couldn't. Esbjorn wasn't going to accept him as a student. And Father said, well, he said, he's not truly an Augustana student so much as he is preparatory for Northwestern. Well, he says, do you order me then to accept him as a student? Well, Father said, if you want to take it that way, all right. And so he took it, and then Esbjorn flunked him. And so then Friedland went to Father. He later was a board member. Went to Father, he says, what can I do now? He says, he's flunked me. And Father said, you go ahead and bone up everything you know and take an entrance examination in German. And he passed. So, I mean, there were times when I could take an Esbjorn by the ears and shaking him till his teeth fell out. And still, I liked him. There were many good qualities about him. Now, Birger Svensson would swear by him because he managed to get more pay for Birger Svensson for the work he was doing. And I can understand that. But just to say, there were times when I don't understand it yet. Why would he act like a son of a gun? But he would.
How about the rest of the students? Did they have problems too, or he was?
Well, now Reinerson, you see, had that. He got 70, and he and Esbjorn admitted that he deserved more than that. He says, but we have the rule; it has to average 80. And for those that, oh, many people got along nicely with him. And he was a good teacher, no question about that. But there were times that he was just cantankerous. And then after I was married, he came out there to see me and seemed to be happy to see me. And as I say, I think he liked me and I liked him, but there were times when I could have Put him over a barrel and spanked him.
He went by the rule.
The rule! That was all important.
What traits were they from, though? From his father's side, you think, or his mother?
I'm sure it was from his father's side. What's you see, his father was really president of Augustana when he left. He never resigned. In fact, my father said that as he was growing up, he was taught to revere Esbjörn and Hasselquist. They were almost young gods to him. And he said, as I finally grew to maturity and learned that they were bitter enemies, I could hardly believe it.
So Esbjörn and Hasselquist were...
Yes.
Didn't see it with the same eye.
And Norelius didn't like Hasselquist because he was aggressive. Well, Esbjörn, that is L.P. Esbjörn, got pretty much disgusted with Hasselquist because he'd come in and try to rule things. And here, L.P. was the president, but that made no difference to Hasselquist. And then when he just got disgusted and went to Sweden. And Hasselquist just took over. And for 12 years he served as president and was not president. Until finally, well, you know, Ander brings that out.
Yes.
And, my father, my grandfather, Andrine, and Aurelius were very good friends. And they used to confide to each other what they thought about Hasselquist's way of doing things. Not that they condemned the result of his work, because he was a good, hard worker, no question about that. But he also had peculiarities. Very stern, and in fact, one time he refused to give communion to some of the young people who were up there. They had gone to a dance the night before. He wouldn't give them communion. So those that he felt needed it most, he refused. You figure that out.
So there was a different era.
Oh,
well,
yes.
You would think now, when your father lost his father, and he still had respect though, for Mrs. Esbjörn, you think there was the Esbjörn name that carried some weight there?
Because
you
would think it could have been. It could have been.
Taking over the whole house and throw them out. And
I know it.
But you still had to obey what she said and respect her. And
my father he was always trying to smooth things over. And I think there's a lot of that even now, as we hear the different reports of this and that minister, you know, and they bring out their high qualities and professionalism and their brilliance and all that, and they don't make human beings out of them. I know one time I think I shocked some of the people when I was giving a report to the Swedish club about L.P. Esbjörn, and I mentioned there that he was very much against drink and was criticizing the clergy of Sweden for too much drinking and too little caring for the people. And then finally, when he wanted to go to Sweden, the ministers in Sweden were only too glad to get rid of him, because he was just the racket for them. And they were only too glad to give him a one-way ticket. And I know some of them there in the Swedish club, they were, well, I didn't think of it at the time, but it was, that's the truth. And if you were going to write a story about a person, I think you have to bring all of those qualities out, and not just that they were so high. And as far, I know one time, I think it was Beckman that gave a report on different things, and then he mentioned L.P. Esbjörn is not getting very high grades, and he took more science than anything else, and just as much religion as he had to have, and I think that didn't sit so well with some of them either. But I think if you're going to give a story, they're more like human beings when you tell everything.
Yes.
And not that I was trying to dig up the dirt, I wasn't. But as I say, Father was always trying to smooth things over, and I spent a lot of time, many nights, going there and staying all night with her. And I think he was very grateful to me for that. Mm-hmm. And she had a nice big yard. We could play in her yard. I know one time my folks were going away, and I was in charge of my brother Gustav and Carl that night. And so I took them with me when I went up to Grandma Esbjorn. And I gave them the bedroom that I had been occupying, and I slept in the sofa downstairs. And Carl Esbjorn came home during the night, and I was sleeping on the sofa. And the screen door was hooked, that's all. It was a hot night. And he couldn't wake me up. And finally, with all the fracas going on, why, his mother heard the noise and came down. She had a bedroom upstairs. She came down and let him in. And when I was in my teens and I went to sleep, you could move the house and I would not know it. So I don't think I was much good there. But anyway, if something had happened to her, why, I would have been there within a few hours.
So you lived only a few paces away now, so to speak.
That's right.
Because your parents lived...
Yeah, I think it's 31st, is not far from... Where
on the hill.
Well, from the house on the hill, or from where Sorensen lived. Mm-hmm. If you draw a line, he was about between. You know that house,
yes,
where Esbjorn lives, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was up there a lot. And then he was given one of his nieces from... Mormon country, what's the name, Utah or wherever it was. Anyway, she had an accident, and she had to be more or less bedridden. And she spent the summer there trying to recuperate. And so he had me up there to be with her practically all that summer. Every afternoon I'd be up there. And there's another thing, too, that maybe I should mention here. I told your wife about it. My grandmother, Mrs. Andreas Andreen, had inherited a farm in Nebraska. How she came by it, I don't know. But anyway, she had a farm. And apparently Carl Esbjorn felt that because his mother had married my grandfather, that that farm belonged to him. I don't know. I think it's crazy.
He had a rule for that too.
Well, according to my husband was a lawyer, and when I heard about this. Carl, because I didn't know about it for years, but I finally did hear about it. He said, well, he doesn't have a leg to stand on because real estate has to go down the bloodlines. And if there is no heir, it would definitely go back to the original estate. And I know when, maybe you weren't acquainted with Bankston that was married to...
Yes, I know the name. I never...
Yeah, well, he married the daughter of... he was president of the Synod for a while. And what was the name of this gentleman? He had bad eyes. He was president of the Synod. Do you remember what his name was?
Brandel?
Yeah. Brandel's daughter, and he would not allow him to marry his daughter until he had signed over his house to the daughter, because he said, if you should die, the house would go to your brothers. It's according to the Illinois rulings. And Bengtsson had quite a struggle with himself to do that, but finally he did. He gave her the house. But then years later, he'd call up and rag Papa about that farm in Nebraska. And Father said, well, he said, it was rented for years and years, and there was no particular good overseeing to it. And finally it was settled. And he says, well, where's the will? Well, he says, there wasn't a will. In fact, I wrote later on to this courthouse. And Father says, well, it's in the courthouse there, which was the center at the time for Swedona. And they said there was no will. And apparently, my husband, who was a lawyer, said the only thing that my grandfather could have claimed would have been the widower's dower, which would not have been much. And then if she could have claimed maybe the widower's dower. But anyway, Carl Esbjorn all the time kept ragging Papa, feeling that that farm belonged to him.
Was he the only one of the Esbjorn children that
made a fuss about it? I never heard Mia or Hannah or Luther or Constant say one thing, but Carl was.
So he was really.
Yeah, I know, and I thought that was effrontery to feel that he rightfully owned my grandmother's farm.
You would think he would be a little bit smarter, though,
I said to my husband, I said, I can see how a young teenage kid at the time, maybe when she married him, would feel that way. I said, but it seems to me now he's a grown man, he ought to know a little bit about law. But instead of always ragging Papa about that farm, what about that farm? And then even his wife, he poisoned his wife against her. And this was after Carl Esbjorn was dead. She says, how about that Nebraska farm? So, I mean, here and there, there were thorns that shouldn't have been there.
There's a lot of problems coming up when two families.
Yeah, that's right.
Join like that.
Yeah.
She probably did it in a very awkward way, though. I mean, throwing out like your father's side and moving with her own. It must have been a tremendous. How could she face the congregation down in Swedona?
Well.
And walk to church every Sunday.
She no doubt got out. Just when she left Swedona, I don't know. She must have had to get out of the parsonage.
Do you think she had the respect of being an Esbjorn?
When I was writing my thesis, I went down there and I had conferences with quite a number of the older people. And they said that Mrs. L.P. had no respect whatsoever.
So she went too far, in other words.
Yeah, they said, as Mrs. L.P. Esbjorn, they thought she was all right. But when she married my father, the whole church was against her. So they knew what she was doing.
So it backfired.
Yeah, it backfired. Yeah, well, anyway.
Well, we might come back to that a little bit later, but we go back now again to your parents were married in Junction City. Mm-hmm. Did they go back to Lynchburg then for teaching assignment?
Yeah. Papa continued teaching, and Mother became the principal of the girls' dormitory. And here she was just a young girl, and today, of course, in a way, she was a dean of women.
And that was during Carl A. Swenson's reign.
Well,
because he died.
I suppose so.
Yes, because he came.
Yeah, must have been. And then Seashore, Dr. Seashore, he was a good friend of my father's. He became head of the psychology department at Iowa City. He was also down there teaching. And both Seashore and Father decided they were going to go to Yale. So Father said that he was going to do it too. And here, Papa had a son by that time, and he landed in New Haven with a dollar and a half in his pocket.
So Paul is your oldest brother?
Mm-hmm. He was born in Lynchburg.
He was born in Lynchburg.
And then father was very good in German and French and Latin and Greek, which was, languages are more important then than they are now. Oh, of course, they are, I guess they're important now, but then they were everything. And when I think of it, it couldn't have happened today, but it did happen then. The children of the wealthy socialites, they didn't pay too much attention to going to classes or anything else, but they'd have to bone up for the examinations. Then they'd get a tutor. And the professors almost unanimously would ask my father, or tell my father, can I recommend you to tutor? So he had Harry Payne Whitney and all these high-ups financially. And he got $5 an hour. That's when bread was less than 5 cents a loaf. Papa said he never had so much money in his life. And they'd be waiting for him practically every night. He'd be busy.
So he was tutoring the careless sons of the wealthy.
That's right.
And they brought him right to Yale University. And how did he get in, though? I mean, Augustana and Bethany,
they accepted their credits, all the credits they had, and so he enrolled, and he had no problem at all.
And his wife was with him then, in the young son.
Yeah, and that's when then I was born there, and then it wasn't long before he was teaching classes. Then they wanted him to become head of the Scandinavian department. And so then they sent him over to Sweden and Norway. So we lived there for 2 years.
So how long did he stay at Yale? He came there in 1895?
Well, Marion was born in 94.
Out there?
Out there.
Oh, I see.
So it was before that. It was shortly after, only about a year or two at Bethany, and then they went. And then he was graduated and was studying for his PhD, and then was sent abroad.
So he was sent by Yale University then, mm-hmm. to Sweden?
That's right, to Sweden and to Norway.
Specifically to be the head of the department coming
back.
That's
right, that's right. Papa wanted to go to Greece. He was so interested in Greek literature. But there was no position at the time open. So he went to, according to their direction, they were figuring that he was going to be the head of the Scandinavian department anyway.
Well, that was 1902 or 19...
No, because he left, you see, in 1901.
Oh, I see.
So
it was before 1900 that he went to Sweden.
Yeah. He spent only, I think, 1 year after being in Europe. He spent only one year at Yale as full professor of the Scandinavian.
So he stayed 2 full years then in Sweden?
Mm-hmm.
At Uppsala?
Well, he was also at Oslo. Yes.
So that time you don't remember anything about
it? Yes, I do. The folks insisted that I wouldn't remember, and I said, well, I do, and I remembered, I described different scenes. Then I drew the plans of the house we lived in, and my folks looked at each other and they said, that's right. Kids remember a whole lot more than you realize.
So you remember the trip over, maybe by boat? Or?
I remember the trip back. I don't remember the trip over there. But the trip back I do remember.
So how did your mother take that? Moving from Lindsborg to New Haven, to Sweden and Oslo and...
Well, to her it was a grand opening of the world, because there she'd been brought up in a very much secluded town, and her parents were not accepting the neighborhood except on very formal terms, because they looked down on nearly all of them. They were rough, and socially, they weren't in on anything, so Mama was isolated, really. And to her, it was a grand eye-opening, really. Then, when they went to Sweden, then she visited her relatives in Norway. And to her, it was a wonderful education.
And your father, he was busy with learning more.
Yes, that's right.
But during that time, he also had an envision of the Augustana plan. Is that true or not?
Even in Sweden.
Why did Augustana come into the picture when he had this offering from Yale now? The doors were open to him out there.
As he was brought up listening to his father making appeals for Augustana. And a skolan, as they called it. They have to do this and that for skolan.
Did they at any time call it läroverket?
No.
They never said that?
Skolan.
Skolan.
Skolan. And then it was Augustana, of course, meant a lot to my father. He was impressed those years. He was very much impressed with the necessity of gathering funds. And when he was out at Yale, he saw how they managed. They had would gather funds and then use the interest.
Endowments.
Endowment. And so he thought, he got the idea, Augustana should have an endowment. This business of trying to drum up enough money to put through the year. And in those days, many of the students didn't pay any tuition. If they said they were going to be a minister, they were free. Free board, free room. And it wasn't a money-making establishment. It was entirely gifts. So he got the idea when he saw what Yale did and saw the workings of Yale. Augustana should have this. So when he was over in Sweden, he got a good many of the... Well, he was always making friends. He was very friendly. And people loved him. He just had charisma or something, I don't know. And and he was acquainted with many of those that were in the clergy as well as up in the government and some of the wealthy people. And he felt that they should contribute to their children, as he called it, in the country, and help them. And well, it's a long story, and I bring that out in my thesis. Anyway, he gathered money and in Sweden with the understanding that Augustana should raise a like amount. He was going to put the needle on him, you know, and get going. And then when he came back, he appealed to the Synod, although he was at Yale, to raise a like amount of money. And the ministers at that time were uniformly against that. They said, no, an endowed school will step away from the faith and they will not follow what we, they won't listen to us if they get independent. So he was turned down. Well, there that money was sitting in Sweden. And then finally when he became president, he had to work for 4 years at synodical conventions to finally get permission to work like a dog and gather money. He finally did after 4 years. And then he worked and they not only made the proper amount, but they got more than
How about the money in Sweden?
Then they got the money,
you see. They were still waiting over there.
Yeah, it was waiting.
How much was it at that time? Do you have a figure or a rough...
Well, I think it amounted to about 100,000. Altogether, my father gathered, really, that is, in money as well as the library, about a little more than 3 million for Augustana, which at that time was a lot more than it would be today.
30 million today?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
That's a lot of...
I know he said he planned, of course, to make a University of Augustana, and he figured that it should be. And then that was another eyesore to him. People would get an idea to start another college and another little college. And then I know when I spent one summer down with my Aunt Lydia in Lindsberg, I thought that my aunt would be proud of her brother Gustav. But the general feeling down in Lindsberg, Augustana was a bad word. And everything was Bethany. And At first I couldn't understand it. And when I came home then after the trip, I told Papa, I said, they don't think much of you down there.
He probably just laughed it off.
Yeah, he did.
Well, Minnesota, wasn't that the same kind of feeling too?
That was Norelius, really. In a way, it was Norelius's fight with Hasselquist that made him go up north. And then it was his reaction against Hasselquist when he was starting his school. And he started it, you know, in his own study with one student.
Red Wing.
Yeah. But it was to Hasselquist, really. That's what started it. So in a way, when Father finally got permission to raise money, in those days everybody went by train, and he was appealing to different ones on that night trip where nearly all the ministers were there. And finally he got the president of the Minnesota Conference. By that time, of course, he and Aurelius were always good friends from way back from the day that his father had been a good friend. Although it had turned into a large concern and a little bit enmity between the schools. But finally then, was it Racine? I mean,